Welcome to the Day Clerk Podcast. So, for the last 5 years or so, if you've spent, you know, any time in a marketing strategy group or just looked up how to improve your digital campaigns, you've definitely been handed this sort of unshakable gospel truth.
Oh, absolutely. The ultimate marketing rule.
Right. It's treated almost like a law of physics for modern business. Like, you absolutely must build this massive automated drip sequence and just, you know, let the nurturer happen over time.
Yeah. It's pitched as this magical set it and forget it machine.
Exactly. A machine that just prints money while you sleep. But what if that conventional wisdom is actually completely backward? Like, what if relying on a five-part automated sequence is really just a glaring symptom of not really knowing what to say to your audience in the first place?
And that is the exact tension we need to explore today on this deep dive. We are going to completely dismantle that default reliance on drip campaigns. We'll explore the underlying psychology behind why these sequences inevitably, you know, fall off a cliff.
Which they always do.
They really do. And we're going to reveal why constraining yourself to single, highly targeted sends actually forces a much better, much more rigorous marketing discipline.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to understand why a single email might actually be better for your business, we first have to look at the daily reality of how the multi-email sequence is currently failing most operators.
Yeah, the day-to-day reality is pretty bleak.
It is. Like, if you're listening to this right now and you've built one of these sequences, just think about your own process for a second. Usually, the very first email involves, like, a massive amount of genuine thought. You sit down, you brainstorm, you figure out your absolute best hook.
Right. You pour all of your strategic energy into that one. Your clearest value proposition, your deepest understanding of the customer. You want to make this great first impression.
Yeah, you really do. But then you look at your marketing checklist and you remember, oh, wait, the gospel says I need a five-part sequence. So what happens to emails 2, 3, 4, and 5?
They just become filler.
Exactly, filler. You start watering down that one really solid, compelling message and stretching it across like a week and a half purely to justify this industry concept of nurturing. It's almost like we don't have the confidence to just say what we mean all at once.
And, you know, the inbox data reflects that lack of confidence perfectly. There is this highly predictable phenomenon in almost every assumption-based sequence. Email one goes out. And engagement is usually pretty solid.
Because it's new.
Right. The audience is curious. The premise of your message is fresh. But then comes email 2 and then email 3. And you inevitably see this steep, almost vertical drop off in open rates, clicks, engagement, all of it.
Yeah, the classic open rate cliff.
Exactly. It's known as the open rate cliff.
Now, I'm going to push back slightly here because I think a lot of marketers would argue that the cliff isn't necessarily a rejection of the content itself. Like, doesn't the drop off happen simply because people just get busy?
That's the common defense, yeah.
Yeah, right. They see email 2 on a Tuesday morning. They think, oh, I'll read it later, and they just forget.
Yeah.
Isn't it really just an inbox timing issue?
Well, that is the comforting lie we tell ourselves to avoid looking at the content itself.
Ouch. But fair.
I mean, we want to blame the inbox algorithm or the time of day or the fact that our customer is just, quote unquote, so busy. But look at how the average marketer responds to that drop-off.
Oh, the panic testing.
Exactly. When they see the numbers tanking on email 2, they don't rethink the actual message. They panic and try to game the delivery system.
Oh, yeah. They spend hours obsessing over the subject line. They test sending it at, like, 9 a.m. on a Tuesday instead of 2 p.m. on a Thursday.
Right. They capitalize a random word. They add an emoji. They remove an emoji.
It's all cosmetic. They treat it like a totally cosmetic problem. But isn't optimizing a subject line for an email that people are actively ignoring kind of like putting a fresh coat of paint on a car with no engine?
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
I mean, sure, it looks much better sitting in the driveway and maybe you get a few more people to walk over and look at it. But the mechanics under the hood are still completely broken. It's not actually taking the reader anywhere.
That is a phenomenal way to visualize it. You are improving the aesthetic of the delivery, but ignoring the fact that the vehicle itself cannot move forward. If email 2 is underperforming, it is almost always because the audience was never mapped to what email 2 was trying to say.
There's a disconnect.
Exactly. The content simply does not match where the reader actually is in their mind at that specific moment.
Yeah.
And you cannot fix a fundamental structural content mismatch by slapping a catchier emoji-filled subject line on it.
Yeah, that makes sense. So if the paint job doesn't fix the car, we have to actually look at the engine. We have to look deeper at the structural flaw of the sequence itself. How is the fundamental logic of a multi-part sequence actually broken?
Well, it comes down to the wildly inaccurate assumptions these sequences make about human behavior.
Like what?
So most multi-step campaigns are designed entirely around a sender's idealized timeline. The marketer sits in an office in front of a whiteboard and maps it out with, you know, perfect, rigid logic.
Ah, yes, the beautiful whiteboard.
Right. Step one introduces the problem. Step two introduces the product. Step three handles the anticipated pricing objections. And then step four pushes for the hard close.
I've totally been in those rooms. It looks so clean and organized on the whiteboard. Every little box connects to the next little box with a neat little arrow.
It really does. It gives the marketer a tremendous feeling of control.
Yeah.
But here is the critical fatal flaw. The audience doesn't know they're supposed to follow those rules.
Oh, right.
They haven't seen your whiteboard. They don't know they are in a structured sequence.
Man, I see where this is going. We build these campaigns, assuming the customer is sitting there patiently waiting for our next installment, like it's some prestige television show dropping on Sunday night.
Exactly. But in reality, they are checking their email while standing in line at the grocery store, totally distracted by a dozen other things.
So the timeline is totally broken from their perspective.
Right. Think about the friction that creates. Let's say a reader skips email one and two because, like you mentioned earlier, they were genuinely busy.
Yeah, life happens.
But then a few days later, they happen to open email three. Suddenly, they are thrust into a highly specific context they do not possess.
Wow, yeah.
The email is aggressively trying to overcome pricing objections they haven't even formed yet. Or it's pushing them to buy a product they barely remember hearing about.
Oh, that feels like a salesperson who pre-wrote their pitch on flashcards and just stands in the room reading them in order one by one. Like the customer might be saying, wait, I don't understand the features, but the salesperson just flips to card number three and says, and that's why our pricing is the best in the industry.
That is exactly it. It completely ignores the actual human in the room. When you build an assumption-based sequence, you are forcing a rigid, linear timeline onto a highly nonlinear human being.
And humans are definitely messy.
Very messy. People do not consume information in perfectly spaced sequential doses. They skim, they bounce around, they ignore things, they come back later. That rigid friction, that feeling of being spoken at out of context, is exactly why they hit the unsubscribe button.
I'm tracking with the flashcard analogy, definitely. But let me voice a concern that I know you, listening right now, are probably feeling. Because I look at my own campaigns and I think, well, human beings do need to be guided, right?
Yeah.
Like if we don't hold their hand and walk them down a path, won't they just get overwhelmed? If I condense a whole sequence into one single message, aren't I just hitting them with a fire hose of information?
That assumes the only alternative to a drawn out sequence is an overwhelming 1,000-word essay.
Right, which nobody wants to read.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that isn't the alternative. The real alternative is understanding the audience's state of mind so deeply that you only need to give them the exact information they care about right when they need it.
Mm-hmm.
And that requires a massive shift from relying on sequencing to mastering segmentation.
Oh, okay. Let's draw a hard line between those two concepts because I hear them get thrown around interchangeably a lot in the industry.
They absolutely shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Think about sending a 5-email sequence to one giant, undifferentiated list of people. You're basically guessing.
Yeah, throwing darts.
Right. Email one tries to talk to the absolute beginners. Email two pivots and tries to talk to the highly price-sensitive folks. Email three tries to appeal to the advanced power users. It's just an exhausting, scattered approach.
And inevitably, you alienate everyone because nobody feels like you are actually talking directly to them.
Yes. Compare that to true segmentation. When you segment effectively, you are sending a single, highly tailored email to a very specific group of people with a shared context.
So it's much tighter.
Very tight. Yeah. Segmentation actually requires significantly less content overall. It is vastly more direct. And structurally, it is incredibly less complicated than trying to build, manage, and troubleshoot a massive branching automated sequence where half the audience is lost by D3 anyway.
Okay, but how do you actually do that in practice? Because it's one thing to say, you know, just understand your audience's state of mind, and it's another thing to actually execute it. I know Dayclerk approaches this with a very specific methodology. They map behavior paths per segment before generating any copy.
Yes, that is central to how it works.
I want to pause and dissect that phrasing for a second because it sounds a tiny bit like marketing jargon.
Yes.
Walk me through what it practically means to map a behavior path before you write a single word of copy.
Think of it as a rigorous empathy exercise before you ever open a blank document to write.
Empathy exercise. I like that.
Right. Instead of guessing what objections might arise over a five-day sequence, you mentally simulate the reader's immediate journey with your message. So let's say your segment is small business owners who previously balked at your high pricing.
Okay, tough crowd.
You sit down and map their path. When they open an email from you, what is their immediate primary friction point?
Well, it's going to be trust, right? They already think I'm too expensive. So the moment they see my name in the inbox, their guard is completely up.
Exactly. So you map that friction point. Next, what are their content expectations?
Mm-hmm.
They expect a hard sell, which they will resist.
Naturally.
Finally, what is the drop-off risk? The risk is they scan the email, they don't immediately see a justification for the cost, and they delete it within 3 seconds.
Wow. So by mapping those three things, the friction point, the expectation, and the drop-off risk, I now have a very clear blueprint.
What's fascinating here is how this upfront mapping completely changes what you write. Because you've simulated that exact behavior path, you don't need 5 emails to eventually address their pricing concern on Thursday.
Because you know they care about it today.
Yes. You know they are thinking about pricing on Monday. So your single email leads with immediate, tangible value that justifies the cost right out of the gate. You dismantle their guard instantly.
That is so powerful.
It is. You are meeting the reader exactly where they are in one comprehensive message, rather than dragging them through a fabricated journey just to get to the point.
That makes so much sense. You aren't guessing what they might feel later. You are deeply acknowledging what they're feeling right now, which, frankly, begs a huge question. If qualitative segmentation and upfront behavioral mapping work so incredibly well, why do we cling so desperately to our multi-day sequences? I feel like the industry is just addicted to them.
Oh, we are definitely addicted to them. And it's because of a fundamental misunderstanding and, frankly, a weaponization of the word nurture.
Weaponization, that's a strong word.
Well, the nurture rationale deserves intense scrutiny. We use this word because it sounds so caring and strategic.
Yeah.
But the entire concept is built on this totally unverified assumption that audiences inherently require time and repeated, prolonged contact before they are capable of taking action.
It's basically a comforting blanket for marketers. If a campaign fails, we don't have to admit our message was weak. We just get to say, oh, well, they weren't nurtured enough. They just need more time.
Exactly.
But is that really true? I mean, maybe if I'm selling like $1 million enterprise software rollout to a Fortune 500 company, yes, there is a legitimate 6-month nurture cycle involving legal and procurement teams.
Yes, complex, high-stakes B2B sales definitely require extended engagement. Nobody is arguing that. But for the vast majority of small and medium-sized business campaigns, the reality is entirely different.
It's a much faster cycle.
Right. Often, your audience is already relatively warm. The offer you are presenting is straightforward. If that audience didn't convert on the very first send, the default marketer reaction is they need more exposure.
Like, if I just show them the exact same thing 4 more times this week, they'll magically want to buy it.
Yes. But the failure to convert was almost never a lack of exposure. It was a structural misalignment between the message you sent and the actual core concern holding that specific reader back.
It totally reminds me of watching someone navigate a really bad date.
Oh, do tell.
Well, like, if you ask someone out for Friday and they say no because they are genuinely swamped with work, you don't nurture that relationship by asking them the exact same question 4 more times over the weekend.
No, you definitely don't.
That's not nurturing. That's just nagging.
It's ignoring their stated reality.
Right. If you are actually listening, you adjust the premise based on their state of mind. You say, I completely get it. Work is crazy. Let's touch base next month when things slow down.
Right.
You change your approach. Sending a bad email sequence is like the person who just keeps asking, how about now? How about now? Without ever addressing the reason they said no in the first place.
That analogy perfectly illustrates the hidden, yet probably most powerful benefit of the single send methodology. It forces incredible discipline onto the marketer.
How so? Walk me through the psychology of that discipline.
Well, when you operate under the constraint that you are only allowed to write 1 email per audience segment, you immediately strip away the psychological crutch of future emails.
I see.
Right. In a sequence, a marketer can consciously or subconsciously say to themselves, well, if I don't quite nail the value proposition in email 1, it's okay, I'll clarify the details in email 3.
Yeah, you give yourself permission to be vague.
Precisely. But when you only have 1 shot, that laziness disappears. You have to decide definitively what this specific person needs to hear right now, in this exact moment, to move forward.
No procrastination.
None. You cannot defer the heavy lifting to Thursday. It surfaces all the hard strategic questions about your product, your pricing, and your customers' pain points that you are hoping to avoid by spreading the conversation out over a week.
It forces you to commit to a premise. You have to really plant your flag and say, this is the most compelling argument I can make. I really love that constraint.
It separates the marketers who truly know their audience from the ones who just know how to operate automation software.
Yeah. I want to make sure we're keeping a balanced perspective here. I don't want you, the listener, hearing this and thinking you need to immediately log into your software and delete every single sequence you've ever built.
Well, please don't do that.
Right. There is a genuine tension here, and we need to talk about where sequential messaging actually is appropriate and highly effective.
We definitely shouldn't overstate the case against sequences. They are not inherently evil. They were just wildly overused in the wrong contexts. There are clear scenarios where the reader's psychological state is definitively known, and in those cases, sequential messaging is brilliant.
Yeah, onboarding flows feel like the most obvious example of this.
Absolutely. If a user just signed up for your software or purchased your course, their context is locked in. Sending them a carefully paced sequence of emails teaching them how to use feature A on Monday and feature B on Tuesday makes perfect logical sense.
Right, because you aren't guessing anymore. You know exactly what step they took to trigger the sequence, so you know they're ready for the next logical step. The same logic applies to a post-purchase sequence where you are updating them on shipping, or a multi-day educational email course they specifically opted into.
Exactly. The argument we are making today is specifically against using a drip sequence as a substitute for genuinely figuring out your audience beforehand. If you know exactly why you're sending each email and you know the exact state the reader is in when they receive it, sequences are a fantastic tool.
The problem is the top of the funnel.
Yes. The problem is that in top of funnel marketing or cold outreach, that clarity simply does not exist before the sequence is built.
Which brings us to the very real, very human tension for the business owner. Let's put ourselves in the shoes of a stressed out, overworked small business operator right now.
Okay, wearing a lot of hats.
So many hats. We are essentially telling them that they need to stop relying on automation and instead craft highly aligned, deeply considered, simulated emails for every single segment of their audience. Is that really a realistic ask? Because I can easily see why an operator clings to a sequence. It provides a massive psychological safety net. It's the second chance mechanism.
Elaborate on that. What does that safety net feel like to the operator?
It feels like absolute relief. If I send an email on Monday and my open rate is terrible, or I realize my hook was a little weak, I don't have to panic. Because thank goodness I have email 2 scheduled to go out automatically on Thursday to try and catch their attention again. I have a backup plan running in the background while I deal with payroll and inventory.
Yeah, I get that. But this raises a deeply uncomfortable question that every operator needs to debate with themselves.
Uh-oh.
Is that second chance mechanism genuinely providing value to your business? Or is it simply giving you permission to underinvest in the quality and the premise of your first send?
Ooh, that is a really tough mirror to look into. Because you're right. If I know I have 4 more chances, I am absolutely going to spend less time researching my audience for that first email. I'll just throw it out there and see what happens.
And that desire for a safety net, while entirely valid from a time management perspective, is ultimately a trap.
It backfires.
It does. If knowing you have that safety net causes you to skip the behavioral mapping and the audience segmentation on Monday, then you are the one intentionally causing the very open rate cliff we discussed at the beginning of the show. You are actively engineering your own low engagement.
Wow. So it really comes down to the intent of the operator.
Yeah.
If you are utilizing a sequence because the user's specific journey demands it, like onboarding, then you're doing great.
Right.
But if you are leaning on a sequence simply because you are too intimidated or just too rushed to figure out exactly what your audience needs to hear today, then the automation is actually hurting your business.
If we connect this back to the bigger picture of how we run our businesses, it's all about intentionality. A sequence should always be an intentional choice based on known user behavior. It should never be a default setting that masks a lack of audience insight.
So if we synthesize everything we've unpacked today for you, the listener, the core takeaway is a real paradigm shift. Drip campaigns have their place, but they should never be used to do the heavy lifting of audience research. Don't let a 5-part automated machine mask a weak, unconsidered strategy.
I want to leave you with a final provocative thought to mull over, because this single send philosophy doesn't just change how we write emails. It fundamentally changes the required skill set of the people writing them.
I'm intrigued. Where does this take us?
Well, if you operate under the strict constraint that you only get one interaction per segment, you can no longer afford to hire marketers whose primary skill is just hooking up APIs and dragging and dropping logic workflows in a software platform.
Right, the buddy pushers.
Exactly. The skill set shifts entirely. You suddenly need to hire deep, empathetic thinkers. You need people who operate almost like psychologists, marketers, who can accurately map a customer's internal friction, anticipate their objections, and synthesize all of that into one undeniable argument.
That's a very different job description.
It really is. If we apply this constraint to our businesses, the era of the automation mechanic might be giving way to the era of the customer psychologist. And that changes everything about how we build our teams.
That is a phenomenal point. The tool literally doesn't matter if the person using it doesn't understand human behavior. Well, on that note, we want to thank you for joining us on this deep dive today.
It's been great.
We hope this conversation gives you the ammunition you need to keep questioning those marketing defaults that everyone else just blindly accepts as truth. So the next time you are staring at a blank screen, tempted to just set up a 5-day drip because that's what the industry gospel says to do, remember, putting a fresh coat of paint on a car without an engine isn't going to get you anywhere. Build the engine first. Map the behavior. Figure out exactly what they need to hear today.